Now, the important thing about a steward is not that he'd be eloquent or that he might not have many gifts, but moreover, it's required in stewards that a man be found faithful. And it took me a long time to learn that in the church, but I believe that's the most important thing of all, is to be faithful. Oh, how many are going to be rewarded someday, not because they did some great thing or that they had some great gift, but what they did and how they served, they were faithful. Faithfulness, that a man be found faithful. And I learned over the years as a pastor in a church that you always had a few. They were the faithful, faithful few. You could depend on them. You could rest on them. You knew where they stood. Now, he goes on to say, listen now to Paul, but with me it's a very small thing that I should be judged of you or of man's judgment. Yea, I judge not mine own self, for I know nothing by myself. Yet am I not hereby justified, but he that judgeth me is the Lord. Now that may seem to be a rather difficult verse, or these two verses, but actually they're not. What we have here are the three courts that all of us have to appear before. And the reason that you have no right to sit in judgment on me and I have no right to sit in judgment on you is because you're going to stand before a higher court, and I am too. Now, the first court are others, the opinion of others. Notice what he says. But with me, it's a very small thing that I should be judged of you or of man's judgment, the opinion of others. Phillips, in his, and I don't want to call it a translation, I do not think it's a good translation. I think it's an excellent interpretation, and here's a good interpretation, verse 3. But as a matter of fact, it matters very little to me what you or any man thinks of me. And that's a good interpretation of it. It's a striking statement, and it sounds like Paul is antisocial. But Paul was not callous or contemptuous of the opinion of others. It does not mean that he did not value the judgment of others. Paul was not immune to the expression and estimation of those about him. He defended his apostleship with great feeling when it was challenged by others. And he was always hurt by false rumors. Right here in this very chapter, he mentions that. You find here, he speaks in verse 11, even unto this present hour we both hunger and thirst, naked, buffeted, no certain dwelling place, and labor, working with our hands, being reviled, we bless, being persecuted, we suffer it, being defamed, we entreat. We are made as the filth of the world, and are of the offscouring of all things unto this day. You see, Paul was very sensitive to the opinion of others, but Paul was not swayed about what others thought. Actually, his life was not directed by others. They were not at the steering wheel of his life. He did not listen to the backseat driver. Now, whether we like it or not, we all stand before the judgment seat of others. It's just something that you and I cannot avoid. And yet, it's practiced too much in this country. It was Abraham Lincoln that said, public opinion in this country is everything. That's, I think, true, and unfortunately, it is true. And we find here that there's a danger to defer to the opinion of others, yield to the criticisms of our enemies, surrender to them. Many court favor and popularity of the crowd. That's what the politicians do. We referred to one last time. Some will surrender principles and honor and reputation. And it was Milton who said, the last infirmity of a noble mind is the love of fame. And that is the thing that today that a great many go after. Horace Greeley, remember the editor of New York Sun, said, fame is a vapor, popularity an accident, riches take wings. Those who cheer today will curse tomorrow. Only one thing endures. That's character. And again, we find that Someone else has said the trouble with most of us is that we would rather be ruined by praise than saved by criticism. And that, of course, I'm afraid is true also. Now, will you notice that Paul was swayed but never changed by the opinion of others? So he says here, it's a very small thing that I should be judged. You are of man's judgment. Then he makes this statement, yea, I judge not mine own self. Now, the court that's a little higher than the opinion of others is another court. It's oneself, and that's conscience. That's a higher court, by the way, the court of one's conscience. Now, is conscience a safe guide? Well, Paul says it's not. It's not an accurate guide. We're to be led of the Spirit. We've already had the age of conscience in the past, and it ended in a flood. The Christian should have an enlightened conscience. And when it rebukes us and tells us we are wrong, we should hearken to it and obey it. And when it approves our easygoing ways, our appeals to our vanity, and flatters us, we should beware of it. All of us stand or fall before this court, though. Was it Shakespeare who said, to thine own self be true? And as the night follows the day, thou canst not be false to any man. And I think it was Longfellow that put it like this, not in the clamor of the crowded street, not in the shouts and plaudits of the throng, but in ourselves are triumph and defeat. And this is something today that an honest man will not be influenced and guided by others, but what he thinks is right. It's a brave formula, it's a noble rule, yet Paul said he didn't follow it. Paul refused to pass final judgment on himself. And again, if I may use Phillips as just an interpretation, he says, I don't even value my opinion of myself, but that doesn't justify me before God. It wasn't that he knew something against himself. On the contrary, he says he knew nothing against himself, but that didn't clear him. Because it's characteristic of human nature, we are harsh on others and lenient on ourselves. That was David's problem, you remember. He could see the evil in someone else, but not in himself. Well, when others engage in idle talk and gossip, do we? Are we telling the truth and are we honest? When others hold to some opinion and are contentious, do we have the courage of our convictions? When others cause divisions and are troublemakers, are we standing for the right? When others forsake God's house and are backslidden, do we have a good excuse? You know, we're not apt to be severe upon ourselves. We always like to cast ourselves in a leading role, and it's generally distorted. We do not stand or fall before ourselves, because God may reverse the decision of this court. And there is another court, by the way. There is that court of others. There is the court of oneself. And then there is the court of the one and only Master, the Bema of Christ. And will you notice what he says here, verse 4, for I know nothing by myself, yet am I not hereby justified? But he that judgeth me is the Lord. Now he says, I'm going to stand someday before the judgment seat of Christ. And he's going to talk about that in the second epistle in the 5th chapter. And we'll wait till we get there to go into it. But each one of us will appear. So then, each one of us will appear before the judgment seat of Christ. Now, what's going to be judged there? Well, not our sins, because as far as the east is from the west, he's removed our sins from us. He remembers them no more, and the sins are under the blood. Well, we're going to be judged as stewards. Our stewardship will be under inspection. And our physical possessions, our bodies, our material resources, our giving, all of these things are going to be judged, you see. These are the things that are to be brought up, and it's a pretty important office to be a steward today. After all, we own nothing, as we said before. All things are Christ's, and we belong to him, and we're in partnership with him. And it's a wonderful thing that Paul says here as he close this third chapter, as we saw last time, or time before last, I guess it was. All things are ours. Paul is ours, and Paulus is ours. Well, are you a Calvinist? Well, Calvin belongs to me, and so does John Wesley and the world. I do not mean organized society, the secular world, but this world I live in. I can enjoy its scenery, its beauty, the mountains, the trees, and the ocean, and life. But death is ours. Very well, Dr. Parker says, death is yours. It belongs to you. Death is not to master you. You're going to master it. Death's yours. Oh, how wonderful. Things present. You belong to Christ, and you belong to me. And things to come, the pathway into the future, the highway markers are up, the foundations have been washed out. So what? May I say, things to come. All of these things are ours. How wonderful it is. And I'm going to stand before Him someday. I should live in the light of that.